Have you ever asked yourself why some people seem unshakable, no matter what life throws at them, while others collapse under the weight of the smallest challenge? The truth is, mental toughness is not a gift, it's a discipline. It's forged in the moments when life tests you, when pain knocks at your door, and when your comfort zone whispers for you to stay where it's safe. If you want to become the kind of person who doesn't just survive difficulties, but transforms them into strength, you must understand that resilience is a muscle. And just like any muscle, it grows only when it is tested, stretched, and pushed to its limits. Today we are going to uncover the timeless lessons of philosophy, psychology, and ancient wisdom that will guide you toward becoming the strongest version of yourself. Not just in body, but in mind, spirit, and willpower. This is the path where obstacles stop being excuses and start becoming fuel. And once you step on this path, you will never look at struggle the same way again. 1. Life is your dojo. What if I told you that every single day you wake up, you are stepping into a training hall? Not a hall with mats, punching bags, or wooden swords, but a hall where your own life is the teacher, and every obstacle you face is a lesson. This is the essence of the mindset. Life is your dojo. The Stoics believed that the world itself is the arena in which you train your character. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "The impediment to action advances action." What stands in the way becomes the way. He wasn't being poetic. He was laying down a practical law of existence. What resists you strengthens you. What stands in your path is not a curse, but the very material you need to grow tougher. When you adopt this dojo mentality, every rejection, every failure, every frustration becomes a sparring partner. Think about a fighter. If he only trains with weak opponents, he never learns his real strength. The punches must land hard. The struggle must feel uncomfortable. Life works the same way. When you lose the job you thought defined your worth, when a relationship collapses, when health falters, you are in the dojo. These moments force you to ask, "Will I crumble or will I adapt?" And your answer shapes your mental toughness. Psychology echoes this ancient wisdom. Viktor Frankl, who endured the concentration camps, wrote that life itself is never meaningless, because even suffering holds meaning if we choose how to respond. Frankl observed that those who survived were not the strongest in body, but those who treated every brutal moment as part of their test. He saw that attitude, not circumstance, was the true arena. In other words, he lived the reality that life is a dojo. Every moment, even the darkest, was training. But here's the problem most people fall into. They treat life as something that should be smooth, easy, and free from friction. They resist pain as if it were unfair. They see setbacks as signs of failure, instead of recognizing them as necessary drills. This is like a student entering a martial arts school and complaining that the exercises are difficult. Of course they're difficult. The point is not comfort. The point is growth. If you never sweat, never stumble, never feel resistance, you are not learning anything new. So the first step in mental toughness is reframing your perception of reality. When you get cut off in traffic, it's not an insult. It's a chance to practice patience. When someone criticizes you unfairly, it's not an attack on your worth. It's an opportunity to strengthen your composure. When fear whispers that you're not ready, that's not a stop sign. It's the moment you learn to act despite trembling hands. This is why seeing life as a dojo changes everything. It transforms every annoyance, every insult, every obstacle into part of your training routine. Let's bring this down to everyday examples. Imagine you're working on a project and suddenly your computer crashes, erasing hours of progress. Most people curse, complain and give up for the day. But the dojo mindset asks, how will you respond? Do you let frustration own you, or do you rebuild with greater focus? Or think about relationships. A friend betrays your trust. Painful, yes, but this is also your dojo moment. Do you collapse into bitterness? Or do you sharpen your discernment, learning to trust with wisdom instead of blind naivety? Even something as small as standing in a long line at the grocery store becomes practice. Will you stew in anger, or will you practice calm presence? Every moment counts. The martial arts metaphor is powerful because it reminds us that toughness is not abstract. It is built through repetition. You don't become resilient by reading books alone, just as you don't become a black belt by watching fights on YouTube. You must step onto the mat daily. And in life, the mat is the world itself. Your dojo is your workplace, your home, your relationships, your thoughts, your body, your fears. Every situation is sparring. Every challenge is teaching you to either harden or break. The choice is always yours. This perspective also protects you from the trap of victimhood. When something painful happens, instead of asking, "Why me?" the dojo mindset asks, "What is this training me for?" Maybe the rejection today is preparing you for a bigger opportunity tomorrow. Maybe the heartbreak is shaping your capacity to love with strength rather than dependency. Maybe the struggle with finances is sharpening your creativity and discipline. The dojo mindset says, there are no wasted challenges. Nothing is meaningless training. Now, let's add the psychological depth. Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, CBT, teaches that the way you interpret an event determines your emotional outcome. If you see life as unfair, you will collapse into helplessness. If you see it as training, you become tougher each day. Neurology shows us that every time you respond with resilience instead of despair, you strengthen new neural pathways. Literally, your brain rewires itself toward toughness. That's why some people, after years of struggle, seem unshakable. They've practiced their responses until resilience became second nature. Life will never stop throwing punches. But here's the empowering truth. Once you see life as your dojo, you stop fearing those punches. You welcome them because you know each one is part of your transformation. The broken plans, the lost opportunities, the unfair criticisms, these are not interruptions. They are your training sessions. So I ask you, are you treating life like a dojo or like a playground? Are you showing up to train, or are you hoping to get through untouched? The playground keeps you soft. The dojo makes you strong. The world will not ask your permission before testing you, but you always have the choice to fold or to see every test as the way. If you want to be mentally unshakable, begin with this shift. From now on, let every moment, good or bad, become part of your practice. 2. Seek discomfort instead of avoiding it. Why do we spend so much energy trying to avoid discomfort? Because somewhere deep in our conditioning, we have been taught that the good life means a life free of pain. But this is one of the most destructive illusions you can carry. Growth hides inside discomfort. The philosopher Seneca captured it perfectly when he wrote, "A gem cannot be polished without friction, nor a man perfected without trials." In other words, the very thing you run from, the friction, the unease, the struggle, is the one thing that can carve out your true strength. Think about exercise. You do not build muscle by lying in bed. You build it by stressing the fibers, tearing them, and then letting them rebuild stronger. The same principle governs the mind and the spirit. Carl Jung observed that neurosis grows in the soil of avoidance. When you run from pain, when you suppress the hard truths, When you try to keep yourself safe inside comfort, your shadow grows darker and your psyche grows weaker. But when you turn toward the discomfort, when you face what you fear instead of fleeing, you move toward wholeness. This is the paradox of life. The very things you are most afraid of often hold the keys to your liberation. Avoiding public speaking, the day you step onto that stage trembling is the day your voice becomes stronger. Fearful of rejection? The moment you risk asking, applying, or confessing is the moment you break the chains of dependency. Afraid of solitude? Walking through it consciously might be the exact path that reveals your authentic self. Discomfort is the price of admission into any deeper life. Modern society, however, has trained us to do the opposite. We are surrounded by a culture of ease, comfort, and instant gratification. Technology places entertainment at our fingertips. Food arrives at our door with one click, and anything unpleasant can be numbed by scrolling, consuming, or distracting ourselves. Aldous Huxley foresaw this in Brave New World, a society not enslaved by whips and chains, but by its obsession with pleasure. When discomfort is erased, so is growth. The result is a fragile humanity, unable to endure even small frustrations. And this fragility shows itself everywhere. People break down over minor inconveniences, quit at the first setback, or collapse under criticism. Why? Because they've never trained with discomfort. They've been coddled, not strengthened. But if you want to become mentally tough, you must make discomfort your ally. Think of yourself as a warrior deliberately stepping into the cold, the unknown, the risky. This does not mean recklessly throwing yourself into danger, but it means refusing the soft life that leaves you weak. Start small. Take cold showers. Wake up earlier than feels comfortable. Sit with silence instead of reaching for your phone. Lift weights that challenge you. Speak the truth that scares you. These are not random acts. They are deliberate practices that signal to your mind, I can handle this. The psychological benefit is profound. Research on stress inoculation shows that exposing yourself to manageable doses of discomfort builds resilience for larger trials. Just as vaccines expose the body to small amounts of a virus to strengthen immunity, small self-imposed struggles train your nervous system to remain calm under bigger pressures. Every time you choose discomfort, whether by fasting, exercising, or having a difficult conversation, you are rehearsing resilience. You are building the habit of staying steady when life gets hard. But here's the critical part. You must seek discomfort daily. Why? Because comfort creeps back quickly. Skip the gym for a month and you feel weaker. Stop pushing your limits and soon even the smallest challenge feels overwhelming. Discomfort is a muscle that atrophies when unused. That's why the samurai prepared for death every day. Not because they were obsessed with dying, but because facing the ultimate discomfort made every smaller struggle easier to endure. Nietzsche called this the fire through which the higher man must pass. He knew that only by stepping willingly into hardship does a human transform into something greater. Look at your own life. Where are you hiding? Where are you playing safe? Maybe you avoid tough conversations with your partner, letting small resentments rot your relationship. Maybe you keep procrastinating on starting that project because the discomfort of possible failure feels unbearable. Maybe you avoid solitude with your own thoughts, filling every silence with noise because you fear what you'll discover inside. Each avoidance is a chain around your potential. And the only way to break those chains is to step directly into what scares you. Imagine your future self 5 years from now. Do you want to meet someone who has lived inside comfort, unchanged, soft, easily broken? Or do you want to meet a version of yourself that has walked through fire, confronted fear, embraced discomfort, and emerged unshakable? That future self is being shaped by what you choose today. Every time you avoid discomfort, you choose weakness. Every time you seek it, you choose strength. The Stoics practiced this deliberately. Epictetus told his students to rehearse poverty, to remind themselves that loss was survivable. Seneca slept on the floor, wore rough clothes, and ate the simplest food to prove to himself that he could endure. They weren't masochists, they were realists. They knew that when fate eventually stripped them of comfort, they would not collapse. They had already trained. And here's the great secret. Once you stop fearing discomfort, life becomes freer. Fear loses its grip. Opportunities open. The worst that can happen is rarely as bad as the imagination makes it. And once you know you can endure it, you become unstoppable. So I challenge you, don't just tolerate discomfort, seek it. Make it your daily practice. Go toward the things that scare you, not away from them. Because on the other side of discomfort is not just toughness, it is freedom. The freedom of knowing that nothing outside of you has the power to break you. 3. Commit to 100 days of practice. Why do most people fail to build the mental toughness they dream about? It's not because they're weak by nature. It's not because they lack talent or opportunity. It's because they quit too soon. They treat strength like a mood, not a discipline. But the truth is clear. Transformation only comes through consistency. You cannot rewire your mind in a weekend. You cannot become resilient through a single breakthrough moment. You must commit, not for a day, not for a week, but for a season of discipline. And that's why the idea of a 100-day practice is so powerful. Think about it this way. 1 day of action is an experiment. 10 days is a trial. But 100 days, that is a reprogramming of your very being. Aristotle captured this truth when he wrote, "We are what we repeatedly do." Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. It's not about occasional effort. It's about what you repeat until it becomes part of your identity. And modern psychology confirms this. Research on habit formation, from Charles Duhigg to James Clear, shows that consistent repetition literally rewires the brain. Neural pathways strengthen, automatic behaviors shift, and identity itself begins to transform. Now imagine what could happen if you dedicated the next 100 days to building mental toughness deliberately. That doesn't mean grand gestures or dramatic sacrifices. It means choosing small, intentional practices and repeating them until they fuse into who you are. Maybe it's 100 days of waking up early and facing the discomfort of discipline. Maybe it's 100 days of journaling, confronting your fears on paper instead of letting them live unchallenged in your mind. Maybe it's 100 days of physical training, running, lifting, pushing your body past comfort so that your mind follows. Or maybe it's 100 days of speaking the truth, no matter how small the situation. The power lies not in the size of the action, but in the accumulation. One push-up means nothing. 100 days of push-ups changes your body. 1 moment of courage is good. 100 days of courage changes your character. The brain learns through repetition, and the soul is forged in the fire of daily practice. By the end of those 100 days, the discomfort that once terrified you will feel like second nature. You won't just do discipline, you'll become disciplined. But here's the trap most fall into. They start with passion and then fade when motivation slips. That's why you must understand the deeper philosophy of practice. The samurai called it keiko, repetition, repetition, repetition. They knew that only by drilling fundamentals day after day could they react with calm precision under chaos. Similarly, in Zen, mastery is not about reaching a peak moment of enlightenment, but about showing up each day, sweeping the floor, meditating, bowing, repeating. The repetition itself becomes the transformation. The Stoics also lived this way. Marcus Aurelius didn't write his meditations for the world. He wrote them as a daily exercise, reminding himself over and over of the same truths. Epictetus told his students not to argue about philosophy, but to practice it daily, in small actions, until it shaped their instincts. That is what the 100-day commitment represents, a turning point where you stop chasing motivation and start relying on structure. So how do you apply this? Begin with one clear practice that directly trains your mind to embrace resilience. Don't choose 10 habits. Don't overwhelm yourself with a massive list. Choose one or two disciplines and commit to them for 100 straight days. Write down your progress daily. Track the days. Hold yourself accountable. By doing so, you turn the abstract idea of toughness into a visible, measurable reality. Every tick on that calendar becomes proof that you are rewriting your identity. Let's make this concrete. Imagine you decide on 100 days of no complaining. Every time you feel the urge to complain, you pause, reframe, and redirect your energy toward a solution. At first, it will feel impossible. You'll slip. You'll catch yourself mid-sentence. But after 30, 40, 50 days, your brain will adjust. You will literally lose the reflex of negativity and replace it with resilience. Or take 100 days of cold exposure, showers, ice baths, winter walks. The first week will feel brutal, but by day 60, you will feel not only physical adaptation, but a shift in your mind. If I can handle this, I can handle more. Even more transformative, commit to 100 days of journaling honestly about your fears and failures. At first, it may feel awkward, but over time you'll confront patterns you've ignored, face shadows you've buried, and begin the slow process of individuation Carl Jung described. 100 days of staring into your own psyche will reveal truths you didn't want to admit, and once admitted, they lose their power over you. This is the heart of the challenge, not perfection, but persistence. You will slip, you will fail on some days, but toughness is not about never falling, it's about returning. Viktor Frankl reminded us that between stimulus and response, there is always a space. In these 100 days, that space is your training ground. Every time you choose to get back up, you are reinforcing your resilience. By the end of the 100 days, you will see something extraordinary. What once felt like an effort will now feel like identity. The discipline you once dreaded will be part of your daily rhythm. The discomfort you once avoided will be your source of strength. And most importantly, you will trust yourself, because you will have proven through action that you can keep promises to yourself. That self-trust is the foundation of all mental toughness. So ask yourself now, what is one discipline you can commit to for 100 days? Not to impress others, not for applause, but to rewire your very being. Choose it, begin it, and let the next 100 days become the season where your old limits die and your true strength emerges. 4. The Samurai View of Struggle. How do you see struggle? Do you treat it as an enemy, something to escape at all costs? Or do you have the courage to see it as your greatest teacher? The samurai had no illusions about life. They lived with the daily reality that death could come at any moment. And instead of fearing it, they embraced it. In Hagakure, Yamamoto Tsunetomo wrote, "The way of the samurai is found in death. He didn't mean obsession with dying, but rather an attitude toward life. Only when you stop running from struggle, pain, and even mortality itself, can you truly live with strength. The samurai saw every hardship as training for the inevitable. They sharpened their swords, yes, but more importantly, they sharpened their minds. For them, discipline in the face of hunger, cold, fear, and pain was not optional. It was the very essence of becoming unshakable. In this, they shared something with the Stoics. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself daily that insults, loss, and death were natural. Epictetus told his students to rehearse difficulties so they would never be caught unprepared. Nietzsche later echoed this with his concept of amor fati, the love of fate, embracing struggle as the forge of greatness. Why is this view so powerful? Because modern life teaches us the opposite. We are told to pursue comfort, to minimize risk, to medicate pain, to avoid conflict. But this avoidance breeds fragility. The samurai knew that avoiding pain doesn't make you safer, it makes you weaker. Like an unused blade, the spirit rusts without friction. Nietzsche captured this in his brutal clarity. Struggle is not a curse. It is the fire through which the higher man must pass. Without that fire, you remain ordinary. Consider your own struggles. Maybe you are facing rejection after rejection in your career. Maybe you've been betrayed by someone you trusted. Maybe your health is failing. It is easy to see these as unfair burdens, reasons to complain, or evidence that life is against you. But the samurai view flips the script. These are your teachers. They are chiseling away at your illusions, carving discipline into your soul. The hardship is not an interruption of your life. It is your life. And how you meet it determines your destiny. Psychology confirms this ancient wisdom. Post-traumatic growth research shows that people who face great suffering and consciously engage with it often emerge stronger, more resilient, and more purposeful. Viktor Frankl, who endured Auschwitz, wrote that suffering ceases to be suffering the moment it finds meaning. And meaning is never found in avoidance. It is found in confrontation. So how can you live with the samurai view of struggle? Start by reframing your daily pains. When something goes wrong, instead of asking, "Why me?" ask, "What is this teaching me?" Lost money. Maybe it's teaching you humility and sharper strategy. A broken relationship. Maybe it's teaching you discernment and independence. A health challenge. Maybe it's forcing you to re-examine your habits and deepen your gratitude for life. Struggle, when faced, is always shaping you. The samurai trained not only their bodies, but their spirits by practicing detachment. They accepted loss before it came. They visualized death, not to live in fear, but to strip fear of its power. The Stoics practiced the same with premeditatio malorum, imagining misfortunes in advance so that when they came, they were already prepared. This is not pessimism, it is strength. It is saying to life, "Throw at me what you will, I am already ready." Imagine living this way. You lose a job and instead of collapsing, you think, "This is my chance to adapt." You face betrayal and instead of becoming bitter, you say, "This is my training in resilience." You feel fear before a challenge and instead of running, you whisper, "This is my dojo." That shift in perspective alone transforms you from victim to warrior. But here's the deeper truth. Struggle reveals your character. Anyone can be calm when things are easy. Anyone can appear disciplined when life flows smoothly. But when the storm comes, your mask falls away. Who you really are is revealed in how you handle suffering. Do you panic? Do you lash out? Do you give up? Or do you steady yourself, breathe, and walk into the fire with dignity? The samurai understood that honor is not about avoiding defeat, but facing it without fear. There's a story of Miyamoto Musashi, the legendary swordsman, who fought over 60 duels and remained undefeated. But his greatest strength was not just his sword, it was his mind. Musashi lived a life of constant hardship, wandering, training, disciplining himself in solitude. He embraced struggle as his constant companion. And that is why he became invincible, because he never expected ease. He expected struggle. In your own life, you may not face swords or battlefields, but you face battles every day against fear, against laziness, against doubt, against external chaos. If you embrace the samurai mindset, you will no longer resent these battles. You will welcome them because they remind you that growth is still possible, that you are still alive, still being forged. So the question is simple but brutal. Do you have the courage to see struggle as your teacher, not your enemy? If you do, you will stop hiding, you will stop running, you will walk into the fire and let it shape you. And in that moment, you will discover what the samurai knew, that the way of strength, the way of toughness, is not the path around struggle, but the path straight through it. 5. Discipline in small things builds big strength. When you think about strength, you probably imagine grand gestures, facing massive challenges, enduring epic hardships, standing tall against overwhelming odds. But the truth is, the strength that carries you through the great battles of life is built in the smallest, quietest decisions you make every day. Big resilience is born in small discipline. A Zen proverb says, "How you do anything is how you do everything." And this is not just poetic wisdom, it's a law of life. If you are careless with the small, you will crumble under the weight of the big. But if you train discipline in the minor details, you will be ready when the crisis strikes. William James, the father of modern psychology, understood this when he wrote that habits are the invisible architecture of destiny. What he meant is simple. Your future will not be determined by one or two big events, but by the countless small choices that quietly shape who you become. Do you hit the snooze button, or do you rise with determination? Do you scroll through your phone for hours, or do you read, reflect, and sharpen your mind? Do you keep the small promises you make to yourself, or do you excuse them as not important? These tiny decisions carve your character more than any dramatic moment ever will. Think about a soldier preparing for war. He doesn't wait for the battlefield to learn discipline. He builds it in training, polishing his boots, making his bed, repeating drills, perfecting form. These may look trivial, but they create the mental framework of order and precision that later holds steady in chaos. That's why armies emphasize strict routines, because discipline in small things becomes strength in the storm. And the same principle applies to your life. If you cannot control how you start your morning, how will you control yourself in crisis? If you cannot discipline your tongue in casual conversation, how will you hold your composure under attack? Modern life deceives us into thinking that small actions don't matter. We live in a culture obsessed with quick results, dramatic transformations, overnight success. But greatness is never built overnight. It is built brick by brick, habit by habit, choice by choice. Consider the person who wants to write a book. They dream of finishing hundreds of pages, but they avoid the discipline of writing a single page daily. Months pass and nothing happens. Or consider someone who wants to be physically strong. They imagine lifting heavy weights, but they skip the daily commitment to exercise, eat well, and rest. They fail not because the goal was impossible, but because they neglected the small steps that make it inevitable. Stoic philosophy reinforces this truth. Epictetus told his students, "No man is free who is not master of himself." and mastery of the self begins in the smallest acts. It is in the choice to control your temper when provoked, to speak truth instead of lies, even when it's inconvenient, to delay gratification when temptation calls. These small victories add up. They are not random. They are the foundation of freedom. And freedom is the root of mental toughness. Look around at people who collapse under pressure. Often their downfall didn't begin with the big crisis. It began with the small neglects. The person who betrays trust in a major situation usually first betrayed themselves in small ways, cutting corners, breaking promises, excusing dishonesty. By the time the big test comes, their character is already weakened. On the other hand, those who remain unshakable in catastrophe are the ones who trained quietly for years, building small habits of integrity and discipline until resilience became second nature. So what does this look like for you? It means paying attention to the details. Clean your space, because order in your environment reflects order in your mind. Be punctual, because respecting time builds reliability. Finish what you start, even if it's a simple task, because completion builds momentum. Control your diet, because mastery of appetite builds mastery of will. Don't underestimate these acts. They are not small, they are training. Every time you choose discipline in a little thing, you are rehearsing for the day life throws a massive storm at you. Think of a musician. Mastery doesn't come from one concert performance. It comes from hours of scales, repetition, drilling fundamentals that seem boring. Then, when the stage lights are on, the fingers move effortlessly. Life works the same way. Your character is rehearsed daily in ordinary situations, so that when the extraordinary comes, you are ready. Without the small drills, you cannot perform in the big moments. Neuroscience confirms this. Habits create neural pathways that make behavior automatic. Every small disciplined act strengthens the circuitry of self-control. Skip the small acts, and your brain weakens. But practice them daily, and your brain learns toughness until it becomes your default mode. This is why people who have lived disciplined lives often appear calm in crisis. Their brain is already wired for composure. They don't have to try. They simply are. The challenge is that small discipline feels insignificant, and so it's easy to dismiss. But greatness is always disguised in the ordinary. The samurai understood this. Their training included simple rituals repeated endlessly: tying knots, cleaning weapons, maintaining posture. Why? Because in war, every detail mattered. A poorly tied knot could mean death. A sloppy stance could mean defeat. To them, nothing was too small to train. And in life, nothing is too small to matter. So ask yourself today, where are you neglecting the small disciplines? Is it in your health, your words, your finances, your relationships? Every act of neglect creates weakness. Every act of discipline creates strength. Mental toughness is not built in one heroic moment. It is built in the silent, hidden decisions you make when no one is watching. If you truly want to become unbreakable, start here. Master the little things. Guard your habits. Refuse to let small excuses erode your character. Because in the end, the one who is faithful in little will be strong in much. The crisis will come. The test will arrive. And when it does, your preparation or your neglect will decide your fate. 6. Treat every moment as training. Have you ever noticed how quickly life tests you in the most unexpected places? You prepare for the big challenges. You plan for the job interview, the presentation, the exam, the competition. But then, out of nowhere, the real test shows up in the little ordinary moments. When someone cuts you off in traffic, when a colleague makes a rude comment, when your plans collapse in the last minute. These moments feel small, but they reveal who you are just as much as the big ones. And if you are serious about becoming mentally tough, you must learn to treat every single moment of your life as training. Viktor Frankl, the great psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor, once wrote, "Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. That small space is where toughness is built. Every time something happens, a stimulus, you are given a chance to choose. Most people waste that chance. They react impulsively, driven by anger, fear, or habit. But the mentally tough person pauses in that space. He recognizes it as his dojo, his training hall, and he chooses consciously. That choice, over and over again, becomes the foundation of strength. The Stoics lived by this principle. Epictetus taught that nothing outside of our mind can harm us, only our judgments can. He reminded his students daily that events are neutral, but our interpretation gives them power. So, when someone insults you, the real training is not in defending yourself or retaliating, but in observing your own mind and saying, "This cannot touch me unless I allow it." When you fail at something, the training is not in avoiding failure next time, but in choosing how to respond to it with resilience and calm. Every moment becomes a practice session, an exercise in self-mastery. But here is the problem. Most of us only train when we think it matters. We save our discipline for the big stage, the important conversation, the dramatic event. Yet toughness is not built in rare moments. It is built in the ordinary. The way you handle your morning routine, the way you talk to strangers, the way you respond to small frustrations, this is your real training. Because if you lose control in the small things, how can you possibly hold steady in the storms? Think about a professional athlete. He doesn't just train during the championship game. He trains in every practice session, every drill, every repetition. He treats even the warm-up as serious because he knows it all counts. Life demands the same mindset. Every moment is practice. Every challenge, big or small, is your chance to build the reflex of resilience. Psychology backs this up. Habits are not neutral, they are cumulative. Each time you respond calmly instead of exploding, you strengthen the neural circuits of self-control. Each time you resist the urge to procrastinate and act. Instead, you reinforce the identity of discipline. Each time you endure discomfort without complaining, you teach your brain, "I can handle this." Over time, these repetitions add up to an unshakable mental foundation. Toughness stops being something you try to do. It becomes who you are. Let's make this practical. Imagine your boss criticizes you unfairly. Your instinct might be to defend yourself aggressively or to shrink in shame. But if you treat this moment as training, you pause, breathe, and choose to respond with dignity. Maybe you thank them for the feedback, even if it stings, and later reflect on what can be useful. That one choice is training your composure. Or imagine you are waiting in line, and the person ahead of you is slow, distracted, wasting your time. You could fume, complain, and ruin your mood. Or you could use the moment as practice, training patience, reminding yourself that frustration changes nothing, and focusing instead on your breath. These tiny exercises build invisible armor. Now imagine scaling this mindset to your whole life. Every disappointment becomes a lesson in resilience. Every insult becomes a lesson in self-control. Every delay becomes a lesson in patience. Every failure becomes a lesson in humility. You stop seeing life as a series of random annoyances and start seeing it as a perfectly designed training program. Suddenly, nothing is wasted. Nothing is meaningless. Everything becomes part of your path to toughness. This is why the samurai and Stoics aligned so closely in their practices. The samurai didn't just train in sword fighting, they trained in posture, in breathing, in walking, in silence. Every movement was preparation for battle. The Stoics didn't just write philosophy, they lived it in each interaction, each decision, each emotion. They saw every moment as a chance to embody wisdom. And that is why both traditions produced people who seemed unshakable, because they never stopped training. The danger of not treating every moment as training is that you waste opportunities. You let small setbacks erode you instead of strengthen you. You allow life to slip past, believing that real challenges will come later. But the truth is, later never comes. There is only now. And now is always training you, whether you realize it or not. So the question is, how will you use the training? Will you continue reacting impulsively, wasting the space between stimulus and response? Or will you start using each moment as a drill in discipline? If you do, you will discover something extraordinary. You no longer need to wait for life to test you. You are already training daily. And when the big storms come, as they inevitably will, you will stand firm, not because you suddenly found courage, but because you have been practicing courage in every ordinary moment along the way. 7. Build inner boundaries. What does it really mean to be free? Most people think freedom is about doing whatever you want, whenever you want, without restriction. But the truth is far more demanding. Real freedom begins with mastery over yourself, and that mastery is impossible without boundaries. Epictetus said it clearly, "No man is free who is not master of himself." If you do not control your impulses, your emotions, and your thoughts, then you are not free. You are a slave to whatever stimulus happens to shake you. And this is why inner boundaries are the foundation of mental toughness. When people hear the word boundaries, they usually think about setting limits with others, saying no to toxic people, protecting your time, refusing exploitation. These are important, yes. But the most important boundaries are not external, they are internal. They are the invisible lines you draw inside yourself, telling your mind and your heart, "This is the limit. This is what I allow. This is what I will not cross." Without those inner walls, you will be invaded constantly, not by others, but by your own lack of discipline. Carl Rogers, the great psychologist, spoke about congruence, the alignment between your inner values and your outer actions. To be congruent means your behavior matches your deepest principles, but this is impossible without inner boundaries. If you do not know where you stand, you will bend with every pressure. You will say yes when you want to say no. You will explode in anger when you intended to stay calm. You will chase distractions when you swore to stay focused. Mental weakness is not caused by others. It is caused by your own inability to enforce your inner limits. Consider how this plays out in daily life. You decide to wake up early, but the moment your alarm rings, your mind whispers, "Just 10 more minutes." Without boundaries, you surrender. You promise yourself not to check your phone during work, but the instant a notification buzzes, you give in. You vow not to eat junk food, but the craving hits and you fold. None of these moments are dramatic, yet each one chips away at your strength. Every time you break your own boundary, you send a message to your mind: "My word doesn't matter." Over time, this erodes self-trust. And without self-trust, toughness is impossible. Think of inner boundaries as the walls of a fortress. If they are weak, any small attack will break through. But if they are strong, you can withstand storms. The ancient Stoics understood this. They believed that true invulnerability came not from wealth, status, or physical strength, but from mastery of the mind. if insults cannot penetrate you, if fear cannot control you, if temptation cannot sway you, then you are untouchable. But to reach that state, you must draw clear inner boundaries and defend them relentlessly. Psychology offers the same lesson. Albert Bandura's concept of self-efficacy, the belief in your ability to succeed, grows every time you keep a promise to yourself, and self-efficacy collapses every time you betray yourself. This is why people who lack boundaries feel powerless. They may blame the world, but the truth is, their weakness comes from within. They have trained themselves to ignore their own rules, and so they live at the mercy of emotions, cravings, and external pressures. How do you start building inner boundaries? Begin small. Choose one area of your life where you constantly give in. Maybe it's procrastination, maybe it's emotional outbursts, maybe it's overindulgence in food, drink, or entertainment. Set a clear rule for yourself, something measurable, something firm, and then defend it as if your life depends on it, because in a way, it does. Each time you keep that boundary, you reinforce the message, I am in control. Each time you slip but return quickly, you prove resilience. Over time, these victories build the fortress of self-mastery. But boundaries are not just about restriction, they are about protection. By saying no to what weakens you, you create space for what strengthens you. If you refuse to let anger control you, you create space for calm. If you refuse to waste time on distractions, you create space for focus. If you refuse to betray your values, you create space for dignity. Boundaries are not cages, they are shields. They don't limit you, they preserve your strength for what matters. The samurai understood this as well. They lived with strict codes, rituals of behavior, rules of honor, that at first glance might look limiting, but these codes gave them clarity. Because they knew where the lines were, they were not distracted by impulses. They could walk into battle steady because their minds had already been disciplined in daily life. In the same way, your inner boundaries are your code. They give you clarity, they free you from chaos, and they make you steady in crisis. Of course, the world will test these boundaries. People will push them. Life will tempt you to break them. Your own emotions will rebel against them. But this is the point. Every test is training. Each time you defend your inner fortress, you grow stronger. And each time you fail but rise again, you prove that your boundaries are real, not fragile illusions. So let me ask you directly, what are the boundaries you've set for yourself? Do you even know them? Or are you living without lines, surrendering to whatever the day throws at you? If you want to be mentally unshakable, you must draw your lines clearly and live by them ruthlessly. Build those boundaries, protect your peace, guard your values, because only the person who rules himself is truly free. 8. Step into your personal pilgrimage. There comes a time in every life when comfort becomes poison. You may not notice it at first. It creeps in slowly, disguised as safety, stability, and routine. You tell yourself that staying where you are is wise, that avoiding risk is practical, that tomorrow is a better time to begin. But deep down, you feel the truth. You are stagnant. You are not growing, and the soul cannot breathe in stagnation. That is why every strong person in every culture, in every era, has had to step into a personal pilgrimage, a journey away from comfort and toward reality, toward challenge, toward transformation. A pilgrimage is not just about walking miles to a holy place. It is about leaving behind what is familiar, testing yourself against the unknown, and returning changed. Alexis Carrel once wrote, "Man cannot remake himself without suffering, for he is both the marble and the sculptor." This captures the essence of pilgrimage. You must break away from what is easy and allow life's chisel to carve you into something new. The samurai understood this. Musashi, the great swordsman, wandered without possessions, living simply, testing himself against opponents and solitude alike. He wrote, "You must understand that there is more than one path to the top of the mountain." His life was not about ease, but about constant pilgrimage into the unknown. Modern life resists this truth. It tells you to stay put, to protect comfort, to avoid risk. You are offered endless distractions to keep you from hearing the call to journey. Streaming, scrolling, consuming. It all lulls you into forgetting that you are meant to move forward, to be tested. But if you avoid your pilgrimage, you pay the price in silence, emptiness, anxiety, depression. The restless soul knows when it is avoiding its path. Zygmunt Bauman described our world as liquid, where everything is disposable and nothing is solid. But pilgrimage is the opposite. It is solid, it is intentional, it is stepping into the fire of commitment. What does this look like in practice? For some, it is a literal journey, leaving home, traveling light, seeking solitude in nature or in foreign lands. For others, it is symbolic, starting a new project that terrifies you, leaving behind an unhealthy relationship, committing to a discipline that demands your whole being. The point is not where you go, but what you leave behind. Pilgrimage always requires departure, leaving the false safety of comfort to test what you are truly made of. Psychology affirms the necessity of this. Carl Jung spoke of individuation, the process of becoming your truest self by confronting the unconscious, by facing the shadow you've been avoiding. That process is a kind of pilgrimage, an inner journey into the parts of yourself you'd rather ignore. It is uncomfortable, sometimes terrifying, but it is the only path to wholeness. In the same way, your outer pilgrimage, whether a physical journey or a radical life change, is the stage where your hidden strength is revealed. Think of the stories that inspire humanity. Abraham leaving his homeland. The Buddha leaving the palace of luxury. Odysseus wandering for years before returning home, transformed. These are not just myths or religious tales. They are blueprints of the human soul. Every person is called to their own version of departure, trial, and return. And every person who refuses that call remains trapped in a half-life, comfortable but incomplete. So what might your personal pilgrimage look like? Perhaps it is deciding to quit a job that suffocates your spirit, even though it pays well, and stepping into the uncertainty of building something meaningful. Perhaps it is walking away from a circle of friends who keep you small, and enduring the loneliness of seeking people who will challenge you to grow. Perhaps it is facing your deepest fear, whether it's public speaking, vulnerability in love, or confronting a painful past and choosing to walk straight into it. The pilgrimage is always personal, always demanding, and always transformative. The samurai embraced death as a daily meditation because it freed them from fear. In the same way, stepping into your personal pilgrimage frees you from the quiet death of stagnation. You realize that survival is not the goal, living fully is. And living fully always demands risk. Nietzsche said that the higher man must pass through fire. That fire is the pilgrimage, and you cannot avoid it if you want to become unshakable. Ask yourself, where am I clinging to comfort? Where have I convinced myself that staying safe is wisdom, when in truth it is cowardice? Where is life calling me to step out, to leave behind the known, to be tested? These questions are not rhetorical, they are the beginning of your pilgrimage. Because the moment you begin asking honestly, you already feel the pull of the road ahead. And here is the paradox. Though the pilgrimage feels like leaving home, its true purpose is to bring you back home, to your truest self, the self that cannot be born in comfort, but only in trial. When you return, you are not the same. You are steadier, clearer, tougher. You carry scars, but they are sacred. They mark you as someone who chose to walk the hard road instead of sitting still in the illusion of safety. So I will tell you this. Don't wait. Step into your pilgrimage now. Leave behind what no longer serves you. Face the trials waiting ahead. For in that journey lies your transformation. The path will be brutal, yes, but it will also be the path that makes you. 9. Keep the promises you make to yourself. Have you ever noticed how easy it is to keep promises to others, yet how quickly you betray yourself? You show up on time for meetings, but you snooze your own alarm. You work late to meet deadlines, but you abandon the workout you promised yourself. You encourage your friends to chase their dreams, but you procrastinate on your own goals. This quiet betrayal happens so often that most people no longer notice it. But here's the truth. The strongest foundation of mental toughness is not the promises you keep to others, it's the promises you keep to yourself. Friedrich Nietzsche wrote, "He who has a why to live can bear almost any how." That why becomes powerful only when you prove to yourself, through action, that you can be trusted to pursue it. Without self-trust, your why collapses. You may talk about goals, dreams, and values, but deep down, you know you cannot rely on yourself. And that knowledge poisons your strength. On the other hand, every time you keep even a small promise to yourself, you reinforce the most important belief you can ever carry. I can depend on me. Albert Bandura, one of the greatest psychologists of the 20th century, called this self-efficacy, the belief in your ability to execute on your goals. Self-efficacy is not built through motivation, hype, or dreams. It is built through evidence. Each time you act on your word, you give your brain proof that you can be trusted. Each time you break your word, you teach your brain the opposite. Over years, this silent training shapes your entire identity. People who constantly break their own promises live in a state of quiet self-doubt, always sabotaging themselves. People who honor their own word radiate confidence even before success arrives. Let's look at a simple example. You tell yourself you will start journaling every morning. On day one, you do it. On day two, you forget. On day three, you promise again, but skip it. By the end of the week, your brain has learned a painful lesson. My promises don't matter. Now compare that with someone who decides to meditate for 5 minutes a day. Small, simple, almost trivial. But they do it every day for 100 days. By the end of that journey, they have not only built the habit, they have built trust. Their brain has learned, when I say I will do something, I do it. That trust is priceless. The Stoics knew this long before psychology confirmed it. Epictetus taught his students not to argue about philosophy, but to live it, to practice it daily, to keep their commitments to themselves, even when no one else was watching. Marcus Aurelius wrote his meditations not for an audience, but as a daily reminder to himself, his private promise to live with virtue, repeated each morning and evening. They understood that the real battle is always within. Public victories mean nothing if you constantly betray yourself in private. Why is this so critical for mental toughness? Because life will test you. There will be moments when no one is watching, no one is cheering, no one is there to hold you accountable. In those moments, the only thing that will carry you through is the strength of your self-trust. If you know you can rely on yourself, you will stand firm. If you know deep down, that you usually fold, you will collapse. It really is that simple. Think about it like a relationship. If you constantly lied to a friend, broke plans, and ignored promises, would they trust you? Of course not. And yet, many of us treat ourselves this way daily. Then we wonder why our confidence is weak, why we hesitate when opportunities appear, why we doubt ourselves under pressure. The answer is obvious. We have destroyed trust in ourselves. And rebuilding that trust begins not with grand gestures, but with small, consistent promises. So, how do you start? First, stop overpromising. Most people sabotage themselves by making huge commitments they cannot sustain. I will wake up at 5 a.m. every day, run 10 miles, write 50 pages, and meditate for an hour. Within days, they fail, and the cycle of broken promises continues. Instead, start small. Choose one promise so clear and simple it's almost impossible to break. Maybe it's drinking a glass of water upon waking. Maybe it's writing one paragraph. Maybe it's doing 5 push-ups. The size doesn't matter. The integrity does. Second, track it. Write down your promise and mark every day you keep it. This makes the progress visible and gives you tangible proof. Over time, you will see the chain of kept promises, and that evidence will become fuel. Third, when you slip, and you will, don't let one broken day become a broken identity. Forgive yourself quickly, recommit, and keep going. The key is not perfection, but persistence. Look at history, and you will see this principle at work. The greatest leaders, artists, and warriors were not flawless, but they were relentless in honoring their own word. Nietzsche himself endured sickness, isolation, and despair. But he kept writing daily, producing works that would shape philosophy forever. Musashi lived a wandering life of hardship, yet he never abandoned his practice of discipline, writing, and training. They became who they were not because they made promises, but because they kept them. Now ask yourself honestly, what is one promise you've been breaking to yourself over and over? Is it about health, focus, honesty, discipline? That area of broken trust is the crack in your foundation. If you repair it, if you choose one small promise and keep it relentlessly, you will begin to rebuild strength from the inside out. Because here is the ultimate truth. Mental toughness is not about how strong you look to others. It is about how deeply you can trust yourself when no one is watching. Keep your promises. Build that trust. And you will carry within you an unshakable foundation that no storm can destroy. 10. Shu. Master the basics first. Everyone wants to be extraordinary. Everyone wants to rise above the ordinary crowd, to stand out, to master something so completely that others look in awe. But here's the irony. True mastery does not begin with brilliance or innovation. It begins with humility. In the Japanese martial tradition, the path of mastery is described in 3 stages: Shu, Ha, Ri. Shu is the first stage, and it means obey or protect. It is the discipline of respecting the basics, of repeating the fundamentals without ego, until they become part of your body, your mind, your spirit. Without Shu, there is no mastery. Most people hate the basics. They get bored. They want shortcuts. They want to skip to the advanced techniques, the flashy moves, the higher wisdom. But the basics are not boring. They are everything. The samurai trained endlessly in stances, in cutting the same stroke thousands of times, in drawing their swords with precision. To an outsider, it looked repetitive, even dull. But to the warrior, it was sacred. Because in the chaos of battle, fancy moves don't save you. Muscle memory does. and muscle memory is built only through reverent repetition of the fundamentals. Confucius emphasized this same principle in philosophy. Respect the rituals, honor the basics, because they build character. He knew that greatness is not about skipping steps, but about walking them with integrity. A Buddhist proverb echoes it. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. But readiness is never about desire, it is about discipline. You become ready when you have humbled yourself to practice the small things with consistency. In your own life, the basics are everywhere. They may not be glamorous, but they are the foundation of toughness. Waking up at a consistent time, keeping your space clean, eating with discipline, moving your body daily, practicing patience in conversation, writing down your thoughts instead of letting your mind spiral. These are your stances, your sword cuts, your drills. If you neglect them, you will collapse under bigger challenges. If you master them, you will be unshakable. Think about it this way. How can you expect to manage a crisis at work if you can't even manage your mornings? How can you expect to hold steady in heartbreak if you can't control your scrolling habits? How can you expect to pursue greatness if you can't honor the smallest commitments? The basics are the training ground where your identity is forged. Neglect them and you build weakness. Honor them and you build strength. Modern psychology confirms this. James Clear, in his work on habits, shows that small actions compound over time to create massive results. He calls them atomic habits because they are the atoms of your destiny, the smallest building blocks that create the whole structure. Neglect the atoms and the structure collapses. Respect them and the structure becomes unbreakable. William James called habits the invisible architecture of destiny. Both are pointing to the same truth the samurai and Stoics knew long ago. If you want to control your life, start with the basics. The temptation to skip them is always strong. You want to write a book, but you avoid the daily discipline of writing one page. You want to build a business, but you avoid the basic discipline of showing up consistently. You want to be mentally tough, but you avoid the daily practices of patience, focus, and discipline in small moments. Then you wonder why, when life tests you, you collapse. The truth is brutal. You didn't fail in the big moment. You failed in the small ones long before. The Stoics drilled the basics daily. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself of death, of insults, of hardship, not once, but every morning, every night. Epictetus told his students to rehearse difficulties, to train their minds in the fundamentals of resilience. They didn't treat philosophy as a luxury or an intellectual game. They treated it as training, and training begins with basics. So how do you practice Shu in your own life? Begin with ruthless humility. Accept that you are not above the fundamentals. Create daily rituals and repeat them until they become second nature. Write every day, even if it's one paragraph. Move your body every day, even if it's a walk. Train your mind every day, even if it's 5 minutes of silence. Honor your word in small things. Clean your environment. Practice gratitude daily. These are your stances. These are your sword cuts. Yes, it will feel repetitive. Yes, it will feel boring at times. But repetition is the path. Shu is not about entertainment. It is about discipline. And once the basics are carved into you, you will carry them everywhere. In crisis, you will default to strength because you have practiced it daily. In fear, you will default to courage because you rehearsed it. In temptation, you will default to integrity because you drilled it into your soul. Ask yourself honestly, where have you been skipping the basics in your life? Where have you been trying to leap to advanced stages without mastering the fundamentals? That is where your weakness hides, and the only cure is humility. The willingness to return to Shu, to practice the small things again and again, until they become who you are. Because here is the truth, no one becomes extraordinary by avoiding the ordinary. Greatness is hidden in the basics, waiting for those humble enough to master them. If you want to be mentally unshakable, stop chasing shortcuts. Bow to the fundamentals, practice them with reverence, and one day, without even realizing it, you will look up and discover that you are no longer practicing toughness. You have become it. 11. Ha! Break and adapt. Once you have mastered the basics through Shu, a new challenge emerges. What do you do once the fundamentals are solidly in place? Do you remain forever bound to tradition, repeating the same rituals without change? Or do you take the next step, the step the Japanese martial path calls Ha, to break, to detach, to adapt? This stage is dangerous because it requires balance. It asks you to respect what you've learned while daring to step beyond it. It is the stage of innovation, flexibility, and transformation. Matsuo Basho, the great Japanese poet, captured this spirit when he said, "Do not seek to follow in the footsteps of the wise. Seek what they sought. The difference is profound. To imitate endlessly is to become a shadow. To understand deeply is to walk your own path. Shu trains your muscles. Ha liberates your spirit. Shu gives you a foundation. Ha gives you freedom. Without Ha, mastery stagnates. With it, mastery begins to breathe." Psychology reflects this same truth. Jean Piaget, the pioneering thinker in developmental psychology, explained that learning happens in two stages, assimilation and accommodation. Assimilation is when we fit new information into what we already know, like practicing the basics again and again. But true growth comes with accommodation, when we reshape our existing structures to adapt to new challenges. That is Ha. It is the moment when you no longer cling rigidly to the form, but begin to adapt it to the reality before you. Think of a jazz musician. At first, he spends years drilling scales, practicing chord progressions, mastering theory. But eventually, mastery frees him. He no longer needs to look at the sheet music. He can improvise, bend notes, adapt to the mood of the room. That improvisation is not rebellion against the basics. It is the flowering of them. In the same way, your mental toughness matures when you stop copying formulas and start creating your own responses to life. This is where many people get stuck. They either cling forever to the basics, afraid to deviate, or they reject the basics too soon, chasing novelty without foundation. Both paths lead to weakness. The true warrior knows when to move into Ha, when his basics are strong enough to support freedom. Then he begins to adapt, to experiment, to innovate. The samurai lived this balance. Their codes were strict, but within those codes they adapted endlessly to the realities of battle. Musashi himself said, "In strategy, it is important to see distant things as if they were close and to take a distanced view of close things." That vision required flexibility, not rigidity. In your life, Ha means knowing when to bend without breaking. It means learning to adapt your practices to changing circumstances. Maybe your meditation practice needs to shift when life gets busier, but you keep the spirit alive, even if the form changes. Maybe your training needs to evolve as your body ages, but you stay disciplined by finding new ways to challenge yourself. Maybe your career path demands new skills, but because you mastered learning itself, you adapt instead of collapsing. Mental toughness is not about rigidly clinging to one method forever. It is about the courage to evolve without losing integrity. Stoicism also carries this spirit. Marcus Aurelius did not merely parrot Epictetus. He wrote his own reflections, applied the wisdom to his own struggles as emperor, and adapted philosophy to governance. He did not break with Stoicism. He deepened it through his own life. That is ha. The ability to take what is inherited, honor it, and then transform it into something personal and alive. So what does this mean for you? It means refusing to become a prisoner of your own habits. Yes, discipline matters. Yes, rituals matter. But there will come a time when the exact form of your practice no longer serves growth. Then you must adapt. If you cling to the old, you stagnate. If you leap to the new without foundation, you collapse. The wisdom is in balancing both, holding the discipline of Shu while embracing the freedom of Ha. Think of a tree. Its roots are deep in the earth. This is Shu. But its branches reach for the sky, moving with the wind. This is Ha. Without roots, the tree falls. Without flexibility, the branches snap. Strength requires both. Your life requires both. Ask yourself now, where have you become rigid, clinging to old forms out of fear of change? And where have you been reckless, abandoning discipline too soon for novelty? Both are traps. The path of Ha invites you to look honestly at your life and adapt consciously. It invites you to step into creativity, to bend, to evolve, to grow. Because in the end, life itself is fluid. Nothing stays the same forever. If your toughness is rigid, life will eventually break it. But if your toughness is adaptive, anchored in fundamentals yet flexible in practice, nothing can shatter it. You will not only endure storms, you will dance with them. 12. Re, transcend and become double asterisk. There comes a point on the path of mastery when effort itself dissolves. In the Japanese martial tradition, this final stage is called Rai, to transcend, to go beyond, to become. It is the stage where you no longer practice toughness, you embody it. Where discipline is no longer something you force, but something that flows naturally from who you are. Re is not about perfection, but about integration. The long years of repetition, struggle, breaking and adapting finally crystallize into effortless presence. You stop trying to be strong, you are strong. Miyamoto Musashi described this when he wrote, "In strategy, it is important to see distant things as if they were close, and to take a distanced view of close things. This is the vision of one who has transcended. He sees with clarity, detached, yet fully engaged. He no longer needs to think, to calculate, to struggle with fear or hesitation. His being has been reshaped through training. His responses flow with the same ease as breathing." Psychology recognizes this state as well. Abraham Maslow called it self-actualization, a level where a person no longer battles with basic fears or insecurities, but lives in alignment with their deepest nature. In this state, effort disappears, flow takes over. The small self dissolves into the larger rhythm of life, and this does not come from luck or accident. It comes from years of discipline, humility, adaptation, and courage. Re is the fruit of Shu and Ha. So what does it mean to embody toughness in this way? It means that resilience is no longer a conscious effort. You don't have to remind yourself to stay calm in chaos. You simply remain calm because that is who you are. You don't have to force yourself to embrace discomfort. You naturally move toward it because you trust it as your teacher. You don't have to battle yourself to keep promises. You live in alignment with your word. Toughness has moved from being something you do to something you are. This transformation is visible in those rare individuals who seem untouchable. You see it in their presence. They don't boast. They don't overreact. They don't seek validation. They simply radiate steadiness. Their silence is powerful. Their calm unsettles others. Their words carry weight, not because they shout, but because they have been forged in truth. These people live in Re. They are not pretending to be strong. They have become strength itself. But here is the paradox. Re is not the end. It is not a final destination where you can relax forever. It is a state that must be renewed daily. Life will continue to test you, and if you grow arrogant, if you believe you're invincible, you will stumble. The greatest downfall of powerful men has always been pride, the belief that they had transcended beyond the need for vigilance. Julius Caesar, Napoleon, countless rulers and leaders, they reached extraordinary heights, but arrogance blinded them. They stopped practicing, stopped adapting, and their strength rotted. True Re is humble. It knows the journey never ends. How do you taste Re in your own life? Begin by noticing when your practices start to feel natural, when they stop being chores and become rhythms. The day waking early feels normal instead of forced. That is Re. The day you respond to an insult with calm without even thinking, that is Re. The day discomfort feels like an opportunity instead of a threat, that is Re. These are not dramatic moments, but quiet transformations where who you are shifts permanently. The Stoics lived in pursuit of this state. Marcus Aurelius did not write his meditations to become strong. He wrote them because strength had become his way of living. Epictetus didn't just preach endurance. He embodied it in slavery and beyond. Their wisdom flowed from who they had become, not from what they tried to appear as. This is the essence of Re. Your philosophy is no longer in your words. It is in your being. Let's bring this closer to your daily life. Imagine you walk into a stressful meeting. Everyone else is tense, defensive, overwhelmed, but you sit quietly, breathe deeply, and contribute calmly. That calmness spreads. Others begin to settle. Without saying much, you become the anchor. This is not performance, it is embodiment. Or imagine your personal life. Someone betrays you. Instead of collapsing or exploding, you feel the pain, accept it, and move forward with dignity. That resilience is not an act. It is who you are. That is Re. The highest freedom is not doing whatever you want. The highest freedom is living so aligned with strength that no external force can shake you. You are no longer controlled by fear, craving, anger, or weakness. You have transcended the battlefield of constant struggle and entered the flow of mastery. That is what it means to become. So now ask yourself, what kind of person do you want to be, not just act like? Do you want to keep pretending, forcing, trying, or do you want to embody toughness so deeply that it becomes your nature? Re invites you to stop performing strength and start becoming it. It is not about showing the world. It is about transforming the self. Because in the end, the goal is not just to survive challenges, not just to endure, but to transcend, to live in such a way that resilience flows naturally, that discipline is effortless, that peace is unshakable. To stop practicing toughness and to simply be tough, that is Re. That is the destination and the beginning of becoming the mentally toughest version of yourself. So now you see, the path to becoming the mentally toughest version of yourself is not a single leap, but a journey of stages. You began by seeing life as your dojo, recognizing that every obstacle is training. You learned to seek discomfort instead of hiding from it, to commit to daily practice until discipline reshapes your being, to embrace struggle as your teacher, and to master the small disciplines that quietly build unshakable strength. You discovered that every moment is training, that inner boundaries are the fortress of your soul, and that stepping into your personal pilgrimage is the only way to escape stagnation. You realized the power of keeping promises to yourself, the humility of mastering the basics, the courage of breaking and adapting, and finally the transcendence of becoming. Philosophy and psychology converge on the same truth. Resilience is not a gift, it is earned. It is built through repetition, through choices made in silence, through discipline when no one is watching. Nietzsche spoke of bearing any how if you have a strong enough why. Marcus Aurelius taught that the obstacle is the way. Jung reminded us that facing what we fear leads us to wholeness. All of them point to the same reality. Strength is forged, not given. And now the choice is yours. Will you continue living as if toughness is reserved for others? Or will you take these principles and begin today, right now, to practice them in your own life? Mental toughness is not about waiting for the storm to pass. It is about becoming the kind of person who walks into the storm and says, "This is my training, so I challenge you." Choose one thing today that embodies this path. Keep one promise to yourself. Face one discomfort. Train one small habit. And repeat it tomorrow and the next day until toughness is no longer what you practice. It is who you are. Because the world doesn't need more people pretending to be strong. It needs people who have become strength itself. Let that be you.